Okay, well, get out of here. Go. Anyone can do your job.
Hey.
Anyone. You, what's your name?
Jason. Sir, I just started here. I'm an intern, but I'm a poli-sci major in college.
Okay, well, guess what, Jason? You're running my campaign.
Are you serious?
Congratulations to Jason, everyone. Nice round of applause.
I got so many good ideas. Like, did you know that our government, we actually give tax breaks to companies that outsource jobs to other countries? That's awful. We've already lost 7 million jobs since NAFTA, right?
You get the out of here. Get the out of here. I don't want to hear that. Hey, what'd you major in college?
Sports marketing.
Okay, you're running my campaign.
Welcome to Talking Giants, presented by John Boy Media. I'm your host, Bobby Skinner, here with my co-host, Justin Penick. Actually, a lot of times we just say we got a lot to get to today, and we don't actually have a lot, but we do have a lot today. We've got O-line coach Dave DeGuglielmo. I was just learning his name really well. He's not going to be retained. We got Breland Speaks with signed Giants stories, and then our wide receiver review, which wide receiver review could be its own episode if we really wanted to. Justin, how are you?
Bobby Skinner, we have so much to get to. So much to get to. And we never lie. We never lie. This offseason, even though there hasn't been a ton of news, we kind of wanted there to be a little bit more news with Jason Garrett. But, yeah, we do have a lot to get to. How are you doing? I'm a little tired. Thank God it's Friday tomorrow. A little tired from work. How are you doing? Senior Bowl next week. How you feeling?
I'm excited for the Senior Bowl. That's why I haven't put out a ton of YouTube stuff this week, is because I've been prepping it for Senior Bowl week, which, by the way, maybe we'll save that. Actually, let's just do the announcement now, and then we have to do an ad. We have to do two ads on the show. We're ad city. We're sellout city.
One is a promotion. The other one is an ad.
Yeah. Yep. We just use different words for it. Next week, Some Man Radio is going to be in the afternoon. It's going to be me, Justin, and Danny. Probably like around the 4 o'clock range or something.
Bobby and Danny will definitely be there.
Just know Justin's going to have to suck it up and be there. And then I'll be doing live streams, hopefully, with some people I meet there. I'm going to be there a loner. We can be all alone the way it's supposed to be. So I'm excited to see what it all entails. And Chaz Surratt's going to be there, which just made it all totally worth it for me.
He is your spirit animal. So I'm excited for you. Speaking of animals, I feel like it would be funny if you interviewed, like, ducks. Like, if I don't know what kind of animals are rolling around the Senior Bowl.
Oh, I've done that before.
Exactly. That's why I'm thinking I can see that's something that you do. And I think since you're alone and since there's so much distancing, whatever, I think you should do it again. Like, hey, what do you how do you think Devonta Smith's route running was this practice? And then
I will do something like that. I'll look for dead animals. All right. Mail interview cards. All right. We'll do it. All right. Let's do our ad. This episode is brought to you by the John Boy Media Shop. The John Boy Media Shop. The sweaters. I guess like winter sweaters, hoodies and stuff. They're 25% off,
this
Justin.
This one right 25% here. 25% off. This includes this one. This one that I'm wearing right now. I wore it for a purpose.
Right on. 25% off with promo code WINTER. It's shop.johnboymedia.com. And you know what? Like the Talking Giants hoodies, I wear mine every day. During this time of year, go buy them. 25% off is the best deal you'll get on it. Go buy it. How about this, Justin?
Yeah.
If you don't buy it because I don't need a sweater, well, guess what? I'm going to make sure you don't need a sweater. I'm going to burn your house down.
Whoa.
You're never going to be cold again. It's going to be so hot.
I'm going to reveal something personal on the podcast right now. I had a house fire when I was in the seventh grade. And it's been 10 years
since. Maybe you should have went to johnboymedia.com.
Yeah, right.
Shop.johnboymedia.com.
This March, it will be 10 years since my house fire. It was a very traumatic experience as a child.
Well, if you people don't want to go through that, go to shop.johnboymedia.com, find your favorite winter sweater, and use code WINTER to get 25% off. And make sure it's the Talking Giants one. Make sure it's the Talking Giants one, or I'll lose my mind. I'll probably still burn your house down. All right, those are the ads we can do when it's our own company.
Yeah. So
Go buy a sweater.
Or Bobby may or may not burn your house now.
Yep, and I'll probably be fired by Monday, so see you then. All right, Justin, let's get into some New York Giants football. The Giants are not retaining offensive line coach Dave DeGuglielmo. Obviously, if you haven't been living under a rock, Mark Colombo was fired in the middle of the season during the bye week. They because Dave DiGuglielmo was brought in to be like a special interest, kind of like an analyst, like a helper. Colombo didn't like that, saw the writing on the wall, freaked out.
Called Judge a see you next Tuesday.
Yep, that's what we've heard.
We know.
Dave DiGuglielmo, he takes over. He's obviously been around. Like, he's been, you know, with Colts, Dolphins. He was an assistant with Pat Flaherty with the Giants for some time. He's been around. He can be kind of snarly. And they decide not to retain him. But, Justin, it wasn't that they fired him. They just couldn't reach an agreement on his contract. Supposedly, they were trying to reach an agreement, and they couldn't do it. Which is weird, because the same thing happened to him in Miami. I really think it's more of a Dave issue than it is the Giants issue. I really think he's like, you're going to have to really make it worth my time to get me to sign a 2-year contract here.
Do O-line coaches just have huge egos? Because it's Colombo that we had problems with. Huge ego. Huge ego move. You're a young offensive line coach. You're seen as a promising guy. But the second that somebody offers you help because you're not doing your job properly, freaks out, calls Joe Judge to see you next Tuesday. How dare him? And then Guglielmo, second time in his career where he can't reach some sort of agreement. And then I even remember, maybe it's a Jason Garrett thing too, where Jason Garrett and Callahan had issues in Dallas. And that was like one of the reasons why, you know, when a lot of Giants fans wanted Callahan when the position was open last year, that was like, oh, Callahan's not coming back to the Giants because he had problems with Garrett. So is O-line coaches, they have big egos?
Well, I mean, I'm an O-line guy and I have a big ego. True. So yeah, maybe that is what it is. I thought he did, like, there was some improvement with him. It wasn't like vast improvement, but the improvement really began with Andrew Thomas before Colombo was fired. And that was when, you know, we heard that Joe Judge, you know, we were told that Joe Judge was really taking the reins. So I don't view this as like some huge loss. I don't think the O-lineman players liked him either, by the way.
No, because imagine going from Mark Colombo, who the big thing about Colombo when he came in is that he's one of the guys, right? He's one of the guys. And we saw, and I think this is one of the reasons why Judge decided to like, hey, I'm going to move on from you. Colombo had his guys back, like, no matter what. And, like, outwardly just defended them, even when maybe they didn't necessarily deserve to be defended. And Joe Judge obviously felt different. And then to go from that, one of the guys, to Gouche, who is an older guy, he's a disciplinarian, he takes no nonsense from anybody, to go from that, I can imagine it was quite the turn in the middle of the season.
Yeah, basically, some of the Giants offensive linemen aren't sad that he's going, is basically what I'm saying. And it's more than a couple. So, but that doesn't mean he's a bad coach either, though. Like, you can hate a coach, and he can also be a really good coach for you, too. Yeah. So, I don't view this as, like, any Gouche slander. It would have been cool to see what he could have done with this unit, as you know, for a year. Like I was hoping he'd come back. Now they can go out and upgrade, which is obviously always the goal. But I do think the Giants, if they like really wanted to get him back and wanted to get him back no matter what, they would have done that. And so Gouche didn't want to do that. I think it was more of a Dave DiGuglielmo decision than it was a New York Giants decision.
I would agree. I'm not super into this, but I know you prepped a few people. Do you have alternatives? People that worked with Joe Judge? Do you want to talk about that? Like I said, I'm not that big into looking at that because it's all so random, but
you have anything? Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to sit here and tell you like which O-line coach is good, but just some names that could possibly be there. There's connections or, you know, could just make sense. The first one isn't going to happen, but I want it to happen so bad, Justin. Do you know who it is?
No, I do not.
Patriots O-line coach Dante Scarnecchia. He's an old guy now, but he retired. This was his first year not being coaching. He was the Patriots O-line coach, obviously the Patriots recognition. He is known, like, it's Bill Callahan and Dante Scarnecchia. If we could get that old man out of retirement, I would lose my mind.
What if we do get to a point where we can't find anybody and Joe Judge just begs this guy to come out of retirement for a year?
You should. Hey, I think Joe Judge would be mistaken to not at least give him a call and see what he's doing. Like, he may have wanted to get out from under from Bill, too, you know? Maybe he was like Brady. He wanted to get out from under it, but didn't want to make it obvious and go somewhere else right away. So maybe Joe Judge gets this old man out of retirement.
I don't know. Fingers crossed. Fingers crossed, Bobby Skinner. I don't know a lot about these guys. That's the thing. I don't know a lot about these guys.
Okay. I mean, I don't know a ton either, but I just want to give some names out there. Another one. Here's a guy we do know a lot about. Pat Flaherty. He was the Giants O-line coach from 2004 to 2015. He was the Miami coach last year and was fired for Dave DeGuglielmo. They moved on from Pat Flaherty and promoted Dave, and then he couldn't be retained at the end of the year. Very similar situation. Obviously, he's familiar with the New York Giants, was part of, you know, that O-line that was one of our favorites of all time. And the Miami connection is basically a New England connection at this point with the way some coaches have went through there with Patrick Graham. So there is connection there. Pat Flaherty could be another one. Would you be interested in bringing Pat Flaherty back?
Different coaching staffs. You almost feel like it's entirely different. There's not even a single starter. Don't even know a single starter nor anybody on the roster that's from 2015 on the offensive line. No. So, yeah.
But he's an analyst for Penn State these past couple of years where, you know, Sean Spencer. So O-line coaches and D-line coaches spend a lot of time together. So, you know, there's got to be some type of relation there between Sean Spencer and Pat Flaherty as well.
And doing different things.
There's relationships there besides just former Giants guy.
Yeah, and doing different things I feel like is a cool thing too. It makes you more of a diverse candidate. So, you know, especially, you know, we know the Giants like to repeat relationships, and if they left on like good standing, which I know if you leave the organization in 2015, especially when you were associated with the offensive line, you weren't necessarily on the best of standings, but that's also with general managing not putting talented players up there. So sure, Pat Flaherty.
Next, Ben Wilkerson. He's been the assistant O-line coach since 2018. He's in the building, so that could be an option.
There you go.
He's actually good friends with our guy Keenan Forney, Andrew Thomas's trainer. Like Keenan messaged me. He's like, dude, they should get Ben. Now, obviously, he's biased because that's his friend who he played with. But he was the O-line coach for Week 17.
True.
Because of the corona.
True. There was an offensive line coach today. I don't know what team this is from. But as we were talking about passing game coordinator, running game coordinator, we've gotten those questions the last couple weeks and towards the end of the season. There was an offensive line coach who was announced as a rushing game coordinator as well. That's a new kind of coaching carousel thing happening in the NFL. And I'm thinking to myself, well, based off of what, you know, I've heard you talk about the offensive line coach position, and based off of just what I know, isn't an offensive line coach already like a rushing game coordinator without having or holding that title specifically?
No, because it depends. Like they're not the ones scheming. They're the ones that take the scheme from the coordinator and put it into place for the offensive line. But they're not being like, okay, we're gonna run this type of run play. But like, obviously there's input on everything, and the preparation meetings, the day they do that, there's input from everybody. All the coaches get, you know, jam up in a room and talk for 12 hours straight, basically. So. When they install the game plan. So, but I mean, Ben has been here through Hal Hunter, Mark Colombo, and Gooch. So he's, maybe he could take the best out of all three of them.
Get the best of both worlds.
Best of all three worlds. Oh. And screw the world. Talking Giants versus the world.
Ah. I talked about this with the Patreon chat. A lot of things have gone wrong in my life and even your life a little bit too. Since I asked that question, I think it was last week, when you said Talking Giants versus the World the first time on the podcast, and I said, well, who exactly is against us? I have found out who is against us.
I want to say things have went wrong, but we've realized people that we're against.
Bobby, I think it's karma.
Nope, stop it. I realized something a couple weeks ago, somebody tweeted about karma, and you tagged me. I was like, I don't get this. And then I realized like 30 minutes later, like, oh, the tweet, he said karma in it.
Anything that has karma or Christmas, I think about tagging you in. There's no point to it besides just annoying you.
Yeah. It works. All right. Next on the list.
Bobby, something is speaking to me right now. It's this signing that the Giants made today.
Oh, shut up. Breland Speaks. Let's save the Breland Speaks jokes for Breland Speaks. How about that?
Oh, I thought we were there. We're not there yet.
No, I still got three more guys.
Oh, what?
I thought we were done. Homie came ready. When it's the O-line. Jeff Stoutland. He's the Eagles' run game coordinator and O-line coach. I think that's probably who you're talking about. He's been with the Eagles since 2013. He was with Alabama from 2011-2012, so Joe Judge connection. And with the Eagles hiring their new head coach, Nick Sirianni, he has connections with Googe, so maybe he comes in, makes Googe the O-line coach, and you know, and Stoutland is looking for a job. So Stoutland could be another option for the Giants.
I wish that man, the Eagles head coach, nothing but failure in his life.
He has the pen in the visor. He's a loser.
Yeah. Who's next?
That's a loser move. And then the next one, this one's probably not realistic, but he was a candidate last year, Kyle Flood. If you're a Rutgers fan, you know Kyle Flood.
Of course.
Yeah, he was the Rutgers head coach for a while, as well as their O-line coach. He was the O-line coach for Alabama, but he just left for Texas with Steve Sarkisian to become their offensive coordinator slash O-line coach. So, obviously, the NFL is an upgrade from college, but I don't think NFL O-line coach is an upgrade from offensive coordinator at Texas.
Right. Who's the last guy?
Well, and I just put Bill Callahan on there. Fire Jason Garrett and Bill Callahan.
Love that.
Yeah. Just put it out there. Like, we know Joe Judge listens to Talking Giants. Get Bill Callahan. Kill two birds with one stone. We love killing birds.
We do. A lot of birds in the NFL that we play and that we kill. A lot of birds. Was Bill Callahan a good offense coordinator? Was he the offense coordinator of the year in 2014 where they went like 14-2 and DeMarco Murray ran all over the world? And Tony Romo was really efficient? I think he was. Don't think it was Linehan. I think Linehan...
He's been around for a long time.
I think Linehan is much more hated than...
No, it definitely wasn't Linehan because he was... Yeah, OC, 2012-2014.
Yeah.
And then he got fired because he couldn't get along with Jason Garrett.
Yep.
Jason Garrett wanted to get the offensive coordinator roll back. Then he went to Washington.
They went 14-2. I'm serious. Like, I look at that 2014 Dallas offense, and I know I'm a guy that, you know, I like to talk about throwing the ball, blah, 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 blah. But I look at that 2014 Dallas offense and looking at how the Giants are trying to build their team with offensive line, running back, having a quarterback that can be efficient. That 2014 Dallas team is like the blueprint of what you want to follow on the offensive side of the ball. So whoever's responsible for that.
Bill Callahan. He's a great all-line coach. So that's all I got, Justin.
That's all you got.
Pick one. Bill Callahan, Kyle Flood, Jeff Stoutland, Ben Wilkerson, Pat Flaherty, Dante Scarnecchia.
Kyle Flood. Because it's not realistic, but I think it'd be really fun.
It's probably going to be someone we don't know. Like, it's probably going to be some guy who coaches at, Northern Arizona or something.
I don't know. That's why I think it's random. That's why this is not a conversation I'm really invested in. So. Yeah.
And the Giants signed on a futures deal Breland Speaks, who was a Chiefs second round pick as a defensive end in 2018.
Really speaking to me.
Couldn't hold that in for just like 10 more seconds.
Can't.
You can't stop yourself from speaking. There you go. In his rookie year, he played 40% of the snaps, had 24 tackles, a sack and a half, 3 tackles for a loss, 8 QB hits. Not the worst numbers, but like probably not what you want out of your second round pick. Obviously came out of Ole Miss. And then 2019, he was on the IR and then had substance abuse suspension, probably smoking the weed. And then 2020, the Chiefs cut him in camp. This past season, the Raiders and Cowboys had in the practice squad. So the fact that he couldn't stick around with those teams on the practice squad or land a futures deal with them probably says more about him than anything else, Justin. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, he is a guy that was picked in the second round. I went and actually watched his game against New England his rookie year where he played almost 100% of the snaps. Like, there was some good stuff there, you know. Like, you could see why they liked him. So just a name to keep up on. But I just, he probably at the end of the day won't even make the roster.
Breland speaks to me in so many different ways as a football player, Bobby. I think the versatility and the potential is endless. The potential is not just speaking to me, it's screaming at me.
See, I just don't know how to respond to those.
There is no response. That's the point. There is no response.
I'm speechless.
You're speechless.
I lack any speaking.
Wow.
He's from Ole Miss. He had a really gif-able moment.
Yes.
Where he recovered a fumble against Mississippi State and waved at the camera. I know. It kind of reminded me of Strahan a little almost. It was a Michael Strahan move.
Can you imitate the smile? I think I can do it.
Do it.
All right. Well, all right. So he gets, pretend this chapstick is the ball. He gets the ball and he holds it. And then he goes like.
And then.
Well, it was like a weird smile. Little teeth. Showed a little teeth too. It's weird.
Ole Miss. Evan Ingram's from Ole Miss. Can you name the other player on the Giants currently from Ole Miss?
Shoo, man. None of the wide receivers.
Wrong.
It's a wide receiver. Dante Pettis.
Yep. Cody Core.
Cody Core. Stupid Cody Core. Is he even on the team?
What former Giant went to Ole Miss?
It's Cody Core. Isn't Cody Core hurt?
Yeah, but he's on the team still.
I forgot about it. He disappeared from my brain. Should cut him for cap space.
Sucks. What former New York Giant played for Ole Miss?
Elijah Manning. I don't know his middle name. I should know his middle name.
Elijah Manning. I like it. You ready for Giant stories?
Yes.
Speaking of Giant stories, we hit 10,000 on Instagram.
Ooh.
That's our first social media account to hit 10,000.
Only use swipe ups once. I think this weekend, I know you said not to overuse it. This weekend, I'm going to just have swipe ups to random things.
No, that's not. Don't use Talking Giants for that. Try and get your personal to 10,000. You can do that.
I'm a tenth of the way there. Right? Not even a tenth of the way there.
Well, now you have a goal. You have a goal in mind for that. So 10,000 on Instagram. Thank you, listeners. Justin, are you ready for Giants stories?
Yes, very excited this week.
All right, play the music. Leonard Williams was jet skiing with RJ McIntosh down in Florida, and then Leonard Williams went golfing. BJ Hill, then I saw him, he was jet skiing. I don't know if it was RJ McIntosh, but it was down in Florida. Speaking of Florida, Adrian Colbert went on a shark tour in Florida. Levine Toilolo got a pedicure. Nick Gates, Shane Lemieux, Hernandez were having a beer with John Jalapio and the Giants equipment manager. Alex Bachman's sister got married, I think. Joe Webb was playing with his bow and arrow. Darnay Holmes was riding a three-wheeler. I was jealous of that. Blake Martinez was doing a Pokemon puzzle. Nerd David Mayo was at the water park with his family. Cam Fleming went top golf. And Andrew Thomas is celebrating his birthday today. Justin, what piques your interest?
Bobby Skinner, it's your birthday today, so happy birthday.
Thank you.
You share.
Well, when we're recording this, it's technically not, but when people are listening, it is, so.
I'm trying to be professional here.
I know.
Trying to be somewhat professional. It's just
weird. Like, I have a hard time.
You have a hard time grasping time. I get it. So, Andrew Thomas, happy birthday. Bobby Skinner, happy birthday. You forgot, you left out that Leonard Williams was dancing, and I enjoyed that. I also like to dance. I don't. Well, I guess I do post it online. I did post it online once with my waddle. I waddled for Jalen Waddle.
It's a wobble, not a waddle.
Whatever.
I don't even know what it's called.
Whatever. I wobbled for that's how bad I want Jalen Waddle as of right now. Ooh, NFL draft talk. Leonard Williams, is he ever going to make his way back to California, or is each offseason going to be a different spot where he hangs out?
I think he's probably turned off by California because of the COVID laws there.
Oh.
That's just a guess. He could also just be vacationing in Miami for the first 2 weeks of the offseason.
Vacationing?
Because you got to remember, last year we didn't do Giant Stories until like a month, two into the offseason. So we have no idea. We didn't pay attention to these guys' vacations last year. So he very well may be just vacationing. Like, his house still is in California. So I don't think that it's... He just abandoned his really nice house on the beach in California.
What a life. Vacationing in Miami. Vacationing in Florida to go back to your house in California.
Basically, the entire Giants roster was in Florida these past couple weeks. And I tweeted that, and someone was like, that's a shame. No, it's not. Let them, you know, we're not doing that anymore.
They literally survived.
Yeah, playing. No more judging for people for living their lives.
No,
at
we
this
don't.
Point.
Well, we already established on the show, we don't Corolla COVID judge. But they literally survived playing a savage sport since the month of August, where a lot of them did not get COVID, and what? Let them go. Like, you know,
yes,
let them go.
Let them breathe.
Levine Toilolo, what was he doing?
He got a pedicure.
Okay, pedicure. That's what the, so,
I think. Was it that pedicure's your feet, right?
Yes. Did you see the way I just said pedicure?
Yeah.
Little hand there. So feet. I also, when I have a more established salary and financial responsibility, I would like that to be a part of my monthly routine.
Why?
I have a hard time reaching my feet.
Just get a massage.
Well, that doesn't help my toenail situation.
Ah, all you have to...
Two birds, one stone.
If your feet are messed up, all you have to do is spend like 2 weeks like focusing on taking care of your feet.
Well, I can't reach. That's my thing. That's my problem. I have a hard time reaching. I need to stretch more.
Here's what caught my interest. Darnay Holmes riding a three-wheeler. That looked like so much fun. Like, I was super jealous of that. And then Adrian Colbert doing the shark tour in Florida. I don't know where that is. I know it's somewhere on the west coast of Florida, but I would love to check that out. But the three-wheeler looked fun. I actually was face-to-face with a shark one time.
What kind of shark?
It was a nurse shark, so it doesn't bite. I was snorkeling in the Keys, and I went around this piece of coral, and I was face-to-face, and I never swam so fast in my life. And then one other time we were snorkeling, and it was a deep-water reef, and you could see the sharks at the bottom. And, you know, I'm pretty sure they were nurse sharks, but they weren't, like, going around attacking people. And so we tapped my youngest brother. I'm like, hey, just look. Like, we weren't trying to scare him. Just like, hey, look. He sticks his head out of the water. Shark! And then gets on some random people's boat. He was so scared.
It was a bizarre story. That had a lot of moving parts.
He just got scared. He saw a shark and picked up his head, yelled shark, and then swam to the nearest boat and got on it.
Is that something
that you have... He was probably like 8 or 8 years old at the time.
So 8 years old. But living by the beach, right? And are you an ocean guy, or do you just like to sit on the beach?
Ocean guy.
I'm also an ocean guy. I can't just sit and fry like an egg.
I mean, I can do both, but yeah, I like to be in the ocean.
Also, I am also at a point where I can't even sit and fry like an egg for a couple minutes in the sun. I need to have shade. It hurts everything. But do you need to like be aware of like types of sharks and what you see in the ocean? Like, are you aware of like, oh, I see that kind of jellyfish, I need to get the hell out of the water. That kind of whatever, I need to get the hell out. Are you aware of that?
No, because I'm on the East Coast, and unless you're down south, you really can't. There's not great visibility. I mean, you just hope you don't get bit, basically.
Sure.
It's not like snakes, where it's like one snake is poisonous and others aren't. It's like, if you get bit, you got bit. Like,
sure.
It's not like, there's not like poison sharks. And then jellyfish. If you see jellyfish washed up, it's basically like, stay out of the water. Like, I think the last time I spent a weekend at the beach was during the season. There were jellyfish up, so I didn't go down in the water because of that. Because that sucks. You just get stung like crazy.
I have one more question relating to Giants stories.
Go for it.
Do we think Blake Martinez is a little bit of a weird guy?
Weird, like doing Pokemon stuff?
Weird? Okay, so
like everyone did Pokemon. Like, Pokemon was big and then it went away, and like everyone did it. Like, even like the popular people in school. And then it just randomly came back. And I had like friends who I knew were like, I won't share the personal information, but they weren't like, and they were like going and playing Pokemon.
So I guess by weird, I guess I'm kind of saying nerdy, because I'm not the typical 22 year old where, you know, I listen to 90s country, I listen to classic rock, I don't really go on TikTok, you know, all that kind of stuff. I don't really do some of the things that a lot of...
You're just trying to make Blake Martinez seem like you.
No, well, also, we do look alike, but he's a little nerdy. Like, nerdy, like, he has an anime character as, like, his profile picture. Or Yu-Gi-Oh!
Does he really?
It's either anime or Yu-Gi-Oh! Or something like that.
Yu-Gi-Oh!
I don't know.
That was like, Dragon Ball Z light.
I really am seeing, like, I'm really seeming like an uncultured swine right now. But since Blake Martinez is now loved by... the majority of Giants fans, there's one fan in particular that doesn't like him, which we shall not name his name, Snacks. now the majority of Giants fans really like him. I think now he's like coming out of his shell, and it's like, oh, you're kind of a nerd and you're kind of a weirdo. That's at least my opinion. I'm a bad guy though.
Yeah, he's a nerd and a weirdo like you.
Sure.
All right, yep. Let's take a break. Let's bring people back in. We're gonna do a wide receiver review, which I think is actually gonna be some good information. All right, let's take a break.
Come on, pay attention in there. Let's go. We got a beautiful day. Work. Play fast. Whoa. Ah.
The return we have all been waiting for is finally here. UFC's most notorious icon is stepping back into the octagon this Saturday. Be sure to check out DraftKings Sportsbook, the official sports betting partner of the UFC, for a shot to turn $1 into $257. That's right. New users can bet $1 on McGregor to win by knockout in the first round. And if he does, you'll be cashing in $257. Bet a little, win a lot. It's that simple, okay? It's simple. While we are all excited this weekend's premier UFC bout, let's not forget football is in the midst of their playoffs. So head to the app to check out the great playoff promotions. I mean, you guys better not forget about football. DraftKings is safe, secure, and reliable. Make it easy for you to deposit and withdraw your money at your convenience. Download the top-rated DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use promo code JOHNBOY when you sign up to turn $1 into $257 if McGregor wins by first round knockout. Place your bet and watch the fists fly this weekend. Flying fists. That's code JOHNBOY for new players to get $257 if McGregor wins by first round knockout for a limited time only at DraftKings Sportsbook. Must be 21 or older. New Jersey, Indiana, or Pennsylvania only. Restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Or in Indiana, 1-800-9-WITH-IT.
I am going to be watching that McGregor fight.
I will too. I'm really looking forward to it. I'm probably going to bet $1 on a first-round knockout. All right, let's talk about the wide receiver. Let's talk about the meat and potatoes of this episode. It even took us 30 minutes to get here. Justin, the wide receiver spot struggled in 2020. And the numbers show that. Now, that also has to do with the offense struggling as a whole. QB issues. The QB didn't play great at times. And the way they played offense, the volume numbers were obviously hurt. But also, the average numbers went down too. The big three wide receivers, Slayton, Shepard, and Tate, all of their yards perception went down this season. Now, catch percentage, Tate was up by 9.7%. Shep was up by almost 5%. Slayton was down 5%. Big plays for these wide receivers came off of perfect throws by Daniel Jones, who had the best deep ball passing rating in the NFL. Now, it didn't come very often, but when it did, he didn't miss. Like, remember, think about the big plays for this season, Justin, and they came off of perfect throws from Daniel Jones. Very rarely was it somebody catching it and like, wow, he made that. And we saw those plays in 2019. Now, the New York Giants have said they're going to get playmakers, and we all assume that that's going to mean at least one wide receiver in the draft. We assume Golden Tate's going to be gone. This wide receiver group, while I don't throw this wide receiver group in the trash, Justin, it was a bad 2020 for this wide receiver group.
Yeah, Bobby, I really go back and forth in my brain about this one, you know, because we went into the year saying, you know, we know we maybe can use an additional wide receiver, but it kind of was enough in 2019. You know, I think Golden Tate's a really big damper on the entire group, and I kind of knew that heading into this year, and that was kind of the reality. But also the reality of everything is the scheme doesn't allow the wide receivers to do a lot of good things, and here's what I really think about. The Giants were last in the National Football League in yards after catch per completion in 2020. They were last. There was not a team that was worse in the National Football League at getting yards after the catch per completion than the New York Football Giants. So largely, you know, what I think we can kind of understand and come to a consensus altogether is that yards after catch is largely a scheme driven stat. You know, if you're catching a screen pass when you have a lot of cushion in between the corners and the wide receivers at the line of scrimmage, then that's a scheme driven play. It's like, oh, corners are backed up And we're going to take advantage by throwing a screen pass, so there's going to be a lot of separation to the nearest defender. Are you running certain routes that that naturally get you separation, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera? Four verts. You know, Bobby, you know, what happens when you run four verts? Somebody, it's more than likely somebody is running underneath, kind of open, because you're stretching the field. The Giants did not do any of these things. And also, you have to combine the fact that, I kind of was looking up this today, you know, because obviously for Daniel Jones, the yards were down. All the wide receivers, the yards were down. The yards per reception, all that was down. The just overall efficiency of the offense was down. But the Giants' offense in quarters 1 through 3, through weeks 1 through 17, quarters 1 through 3, they had the 7th lowest pass rate in the National Football League. But in the fourth quarter, they had the 6th highest. Now, Bobby, it's not like last year where the Giants were losing, you know, they were losing the majority of their games, like all of their games. You know, and I'm talking about being down by multiple scores. They were in a lot of their games this year. They were in a lot of them. They were winning some. They had double-digit leads towards the second half of the season. But yet, their pass rate was still tremendously high in the fourth quarter. And quarters 1 through 3, they were so, so conservative. And I think you really have to take that into account when evaluating Daniel Jones, saying, well, why didn't Daniel Jones have more touchdowns? Why didn't Daniel Jones have more yards? It's because in quarters 1 through 3, when the game largely matters, for 45 minutes of 60 minutes, they were very conservative. And then the final 15 minutes, they were rushing to get some sort of production out of the passing game. So you evaluate that with Jones, but then you also have to take that into account when you look at the wide receivers and the production they put up.
That well, let's evaluate.
That was so boring that you yawned and I lost you.
No, I heard everything you said. You're talking about, you know, Yak, those numbers being scheme driven. Quarters 1 through 3, we passed the 7th least.
Yes.
Did I read your tweets about this earlier, which was just more of a refresher? Yes. Oh. Let's start with Sterling Shepard, Justin. He's 5'10", 201 pounds. He'll be 28 years old in 2 weeks, so he'll be entering season 28. His contract for this year, $9 million dollar cap hit, dead cap $6 million, so there'll be no point in this year. Then after this year, 2022, he's a $10.5 million cap hit with $4 million dead cap. So they could, if they were going to move off from Shepard, this isn't me saying move off Shepard, they could after this season, and then obviously the last year of the contract is it's 11.5 cap hit with a $2 million dead cap, so 9.5 savings. So there's a potential out after this season, even though I don't think they'll be looking to explore that. He had turf toe in the Chicago game, which caused him to miss 4 games, Justin. In those games, the Giants only scored 14.5 points per game. That included the Dallas 27-point outing by the offense. He had 66 catches, 656 yards, 3 touchdowns, a 73% catch rate, and then a 79.2% catch rate with Daniel Jones. Like him and him, like those two, they didn't miss when they were connecting. And then had 6 carries for 49 yards and that touchdown week 17. I know we're talking about the wide receivers being disappointing, but I think Shep is the one guy this year I'm not disappointed in. Like, I think Shep had a good year. You know, he's not number one wide receiver year, which he's, you know, I don't think anyone expected him to be that. But I do think Sterling Shepard is the lone wide receiver for what we expected to say, you know what, he had a good year. You know, if we say through 12 games he has those numbers, I think we all take that. The issue is that everyone else's numbers are really down.
Yeah, and, you know, not to toot my own horn, but there were two things that I was really right about this year, and that was Leonard Williams, and that was Sterling Shepard. I feel like kind of like an underrated point of the summer that we made is, you know, we were talking about wide receivers. We were talking about, you know, who's going to step up out of those three guys. Is it going to be Slayton? Is it going to be Tate? You know, Tate to have a kind of a good second year where, you know, he capitalizes on somewhat of a decent 2019, even though he struggled in some areas. And then Sterling Shepard in 2019 with Daniel Jones, he kind of became like a new wide receiver. In 2017, 2018, you know, 2016 was his rookie year. So, you know, that was actually the year where he had second most targets. But 2017, he had 12.4 yards per reception. 2018, he had 13.2 yards per reception. So he was kind of like your number two wide receiver that was a complement to Odell Beckham Jr., where I think, you know, maybe he benefited from Odell from getting, you know, more you know, getting more yards per reception because Odell was there also expanding the field. Well, without Odell, his role ultimately changed. And even though we see him as like a slot possession wide receiver, most of his snaps were coming from the outside, but he kind of did fit this role as a possession wide receiver from the outside, where high catch rate, low depth of target, not a ton of yak. You know, you catch the ball, you're going to fall down. You find the sticks, be reliable on third down. And I compared him to Steve Smith. Maybe not 2009 Steve Smith, where Steve Smith caught over 100 balls in 2009. But, you know, Steve Smith in a perfect world, as a number two wide receiver that catches a lot of balls, that has a high catch rate, and is reliable on third down, and is a security blanket. That is Sterling Shepard. And we saw it in 2019 a little bit with Daniel Jones, but I think the chemistry only went up in 2020.
Yeah. The chemistry definitely did go up. I mean, a 79% catch rate, that's unreal for a guy who had the volume that he did have with Daniel Jones. Like, that's an unreal number, and it was over 80% for a lot of the year.
Yeah, and also in an offense where separation was very hard to come by every wide receiver and every skill position player that was out there. And, you know, this is why we say Sterling Shepard is the best route runner on the Giants, because even in a scheme where it's tough to create separation, he did it. He found areas and zones to sit. He found where the sticks were, and he would constantly move the chains. This year, despite playing in two more games, Bobby, somehow he had less snaps this year than he did in 2019, even though, like I said, he played two more games. But I'm pretty sure this year, if I'm looking correctly, he had 37 first downs versus 29 last year, even though he played less snaps.
Well, and think about when he came back after the turf toe injury. When he came back is when the offense wasn't good, but it was the best that the offense was all season. It was the Philly. It was the first Thursday night game versus Philly. He had Tampa, which even with Jones having his worst game, they put up like 23 points in that game. Philly again, Washington, and Cincinnati. And then obviously, you know, Jones goes down in that Cincinnati game, and then things kind of went back downhill after that with Colt McCoy and then an injured Daniel Jones. So where do you sit on the whole, oh, he's a slot receiver, he needs to play the slot? Because the numbers, you know, obviously outside receiver is a different position, but the numbers show that, you know what, he's good on the, like, he's fine on the outside. Where I think a talking point that I had during the season was like, oh, he needs to be in the slot. We need him to be in the slot. But when you look at it, I have no problem with him being outside. And, like, Sterling Shepard isn't going to stop me from going out and getting a slot guy. Like, say you want to get Jalen Waddle and you want Jalen Waddle to play in the slot. I'm not going to be like, ah, but does he fit with Shep? Because in 2020, Shep played on the outside 65% of the time. He had 46 catches, 508 yards, 2 touchdowns. In the slot, he had 20 catches, 148 yards, 1 touchdown. Obviously, it's a different position. You're not going to get, like you said, slot, the average depth of target is less.
Yeah.
But in 2018, because I remember the Giants actually wrote an article where I was able to find these numbers. When they extended him, they did a breakdown of numbers because Odell was hurt that year of Shep on the outside in the slot. He played outside 43%, slot 57%. On the outside, he had 28 catches for 444 yards. And then in the slot, he had 38 catches, so 10 more catches, but for 16 less yards at 428 yards. So I was very, like, in season, like, this guy needs to play in the slot. But when you look back at it and the numbers and you see the games that they were best is when he wasn't playing in the slot.
Yeah, I want to confirm
went
that.
Off of that a little bit.
I want to confirm that. Can you pull up Sterling Shepard's game log from 2020? I want to confirm this very quickly.
Confirm which part?
I want to, because I have the games in which he played the slot more than the outside. I have those games.
Okay. Which,
so
like the games I had that were like the best games for the offense was like Tampa, even though Jones played that game bad, the receivers played well.
What week? Give me
both
give
Philly
me weeks.
Games and Cincinnati. Those were the four.
What were those weeks?
Tampa week 8.
He played outside more. What else?
Philly week 7.
He played outside more.
Philly week 10.
He played outside more, but it was kind of close with him in the slot.
Okay. Cincinnati week 12.
He played more outside. And even
is there
Dallas,
any other game you want to throw in there? Is it Dallas at the end of the year?
Dallas at the end of the year, he played more outside. The game that I, how about week 9?
Washington, that was the game. You could put that one in there. Washington.
Week 9. He played more in the slot.
Played slot that year.
He played more in the slot. Cole and Tate suspend. And then week 1, he played more in the slot.
Correct. But I didn't view that as a good game, really, for the offense.
No, especially, well, the running game stunk.
Yeah.
But those are the two games in which he played more in the slot than he did. The only game that you can say is like, he kind of split was the Philly game in week 10. So you want to know what? You're totally right. I'm not going
to. That was the best offensive performance of the whole year.
Right.
Right, that game.
Right. That's the second Philly game, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So, okay. I 100% do agree with you where, you know, especially if Jalen Waddle is a talent that we will eventually evaluate and, you know, who I like as of right now. I liked him back even going back to June. You know, and that's what I'm going off of right now. You know, our evaluations that we kind of had before the year, because also he didn't really do much this year because he was hurt. But if that's a guy that the Giants like and we really like and we think that he can be like this Tyreek Hill and we think that he can be really fun and exciting, I don't think anybody in this draft, especially if you want to pick them at 11, Sterling Shepard should be stopping anybody, the Giants, you know, from drafting anybody or signing anybody.
Yep, which the talking point I had during the year, which I'll admit that I was wrong, is that, like, oh, he needs to be in the slot.
Same
like
here.
The offense is like, you know what? Now, his outside receiver maybe isn't the most traditional. Like, they align him inside a little more, and a lot of times you have these guys splits are right next to each other. So, you know, obviously you play with the personnel you have, but a talking point that I will not be having going forward is that Sterling Shepard has to play in the slot, whereas, like, a guy like Slayton has to play outside. I thought, like I said, this was a good year for Shep.
Yes.
We'll talk about him versus Slayton in a second. All right, so you want let's talk Slayton.
Yep.
Slayton. Darius Slayton, 6'1", 190 pounds, was a fifth-round pick in 2019. He's 24 years old. His contract, he's on the books for another 2 years, $900,000 this year, $1 million the year after. In 2020, he played 16 games, had 50 catches, 751 yards, 3 touchdowns, a 52% catch rate. In 2019, he missed the first 2 weeks and only played 14 games. He had 48 catches, 740 yards, 8 touchdowns, and a 57.1% catch rate. So it was 5% better in 2019. I mean, everything was basically better in 2019. The first half versus second half Slayton was a real thing. Like, first half Slayton wasn't like he's a number one guy, but he looked really solid, and then the second half, Justin, it dipped off.
Yeah.
And I don't blame that on Shepard being back either.
No. We've been speculating all year that Slayton is going to be a guy that we're going to hear gets off-season surgery. That I don't know if that has come out. Maybe we'll shoot a beat reporter friend like, hey, can you look this up for us? Because we have this feeling. So maybe we can get that confirmed. So, the numbers actually are similar for Darius Slayton in 2019 to 2020, except the touchdowns. The touchdowns and the big plays overall. There were some big plays, but the big plays that really had, like, a lot of value and really had a lot of, had an impact on the game. Pittsburgh, you know, that 40-yarder had a big impact on the game. The touchdown against Washington had a really big impact on the game. But outside of that, I don't know if I can remember a really solid Darius Slayton touchdown or, like, a big moment.
Well, he only had touchdowns in those two games. The Dallas game, he played really well. But games 1 through 8, he had 32 catches, 485 yards, 3 touchdowns, and a 57.1% catch rate. So he was basically, he was playing better than his rookie season. Like, if you put that for the whole season, that's 64 catches, 970 yards, and 6 touchdowns. Like, you're fine with that, with the way this wide receiver core is set up. And then weeks 9 through 16, he had 18 catches, 266 yards, 0 touchdowns, and a 45% catch rate. Like, his second half of the season wasn't just down. Like, it was bad.
Yeah.
Like, if those are his numbers for the year, it's Golden Tate numbers, you know?
Yeah.
And we'll talk about Golden Tate and how disappointing his role was this year.
I have a stat.
I don't put that solely on him returning. So I know that he may be banged up, but it just seemed like he wasn't getting that separation that he got in 2019. Like, where there, even when Jones was giving him those chances, it seemed like the guys were all, like, glued to him. Where in 2019, he at least had that one step. And then there were some big drops, like the Cincinnati drop, which was, you know, that would have been like a 75-yard touchdown.
Yeah, he had 2 drops last year. He had 6 this year. The separation numbers weren't that great last year. They're not that great this year. They're still, I mean, it's bottom quarter. It's like bottom, I think it's like bottom 12 in the National Football League in both years. But for a guy like Slayton, I'm not really looking at his separation numbers. I look at separation numbers for guys like Shep or guys like Tate. But something that I want to share, this is actually a new metric that NFL Next Gen introduced this year, and it's kind of cool to look at after the season. The percentage of share of teams' air yards. So, Bobby, what that basically means is that, based off of a certain player's percentage, how much of the total air yards are being allocated to a certain player and a certain skill position. Does that make sense? Do I have you?
Yes.
Okay. So, Darius Slayton, 34% of the Giants' total team air yards in the passing game went to Darius Slayton. That is insane. That is 1, 2, 3, 4,
that's
5, 6, 7.
That's a lot for a guy
7.
That you weren't really pleased with at the end of the year.
It's eighth highest in the National Football League. Let me tell you who else is
eighth
next.
Highest, and he wasn't. And you're not happy with the way he played this year. That's crazy.
And let me tell you who was also around Darius Slayton in this percentage of share of teams' air yards. Typically, if you're going to be relying on a wide receiver in terms of targeting him deep in the passing game, or just targeting him at all and accumulating a lot of yards or air yards, right? You typically want that wide receiver to be relied upon, and you want that wide receiver to be good. Calvin Ridley was number one. Good wide receiver. Very good compliment to Julio Jones. DJ Moore was number two. Good. Marquise Brown. Baltimore's a good offense. He's the guy that kind of stretches the field for them, him and Mark Andrews. Number four, DK Metcalf. Number five, Justin Jefferson. Terry McLaurin. Tyreek Hill. And then it's Slayton. Then it's Davante Adams, Stephon Diggs, DeAndre Hopkins, Adam Thielen. I'll tell you what.
That speaks about this scheme more than anything, I believe.
Correct. And that is why I go back and forth in my brain all the time about, it's bad that we're relying on Darius Slayton, in terms of talent-wise, and that's why we do need to upgrade at wide receiver. But also, why are we relying on Darius Slayton to account for 35% of this team's total air yards? When, number one, he's not even that healthy, if that is a thing. And number two, he's not a number one wide receiver. Like, those are all pretty much, most of those guys are number one wide receivers. DJ Moore's number one. DK Metcalf is forming as that number one. Justin Jefferson, Terry McLaurin, Tyreek Hill, Davante Adams, Stephon Diggs.
Yeah, that's a crazy stat. You need to tweet that stat out because that's...
It's already scheduled for 10 a.m.
Okay, make sure you have an explanation of why it's scheme related. Because they stopped letting him run a lot of routes too. They weren't letting him run digs. Like, it was basically like go ball slant, go ball slant curl. That was the Darius Slayton route tree.
Yeah.
All right. So I want to talk about Shep and Slayton though. Big picture. Who, Justin, are you more invested in going forward? This doesn't mean their contracts, but who are you like? This is the guy that we want next to somebody. Because the Giants are probably going to add a wide receiver this offseason who they would hope to be their one. And I put this on a poll on Twitter. Shep got 54.3%. Slayton got 45.7%. So very, very close. And I think it's close for a reason, because I think you could go both ways. Even though some of the fan reaction was if you think it's Shepard, you're a boomer moron. It's like, if you think it's Slayton, you're over... you're thinking way too highly of this guy. And here's the thing, Justin, here's where I'll go. Right now, I think Sterling Shepard is a better wide receiver. That being said, I'm more invested in Darius Slayton going forward. He has a defined role as that guy on the outside, okay? And when we say weapons, they may add two guys. Say they draft a wide receiver and sign one. Doesn't mean they're going to go sign, Allen Robinson, but sign a receiver and draft a receiver. Then you have four guys, and that means Slayton or Shep is kept out of the rotation a little bit. But I am more invested in Slayton going forward, because I feel like a number one guy makes what Slayton does a lot better than what it makes Shepard do. Like, you know what I mean? Where Slayton, you can't have him have that number one corner on those contested throws, on those deep balls. If you have the number two corner, it gives Slayton another advantage, whereas route running isn't the greatest in the world, where he can win those routes against those number two corners. So, because they're going to add pieces, I'm more invested in Slayton as a role on this team going forward.
Because I view the passing game as an extension of the running game, right? Where, you know, again, you know, I'm a guy, I like to throw the ball and I like to run the ball when it makes sense. But because I'm a guy that likes to throw the ball a lot, you need to have nuance in your passing game. Can't just be throwing it deep. You can't just be check down Charlie and not expanding the field at all. But I like to use the passing game as an extension of the running game, having an aggressive approach on first and 10. So guess what? You take the 4-yard passing play on first and 10 because that is viewed as an extension of the running game. When thinking about that and when thinking about how we need more consistency in the passing game instead of the once, I know you're a guy where you like to take those risks and you want to take those risks of, you know, once every, you know, if even if it's once out of every 5 attempts of a deep ball and Darius Slayton comes down with it and it results in a 20-30-yard game, it's worth it. And I agree with you. But also, I'm thinking of the Giants offense and how we just need more consistency overall on offense, and Sterling Shepard brings that. And I think I would prefer if Allen Robinson or whoever, if Jalen Waddle, whoever can come in here, you know, let's just say in this situation where we do bring in two wide receivers this offseason, I think somebody that we can bring in can do Darius Slayton's job better in terms of creating separation, in terms of contested balls down the field, in terms of creating more explosive plays, while Sterling Shepard is very, very good at his role and his job at being in that security blanket with Daniel Jones because he already established that relationship.
I get that. And I do go back and forth on it. I just think what those guys do, like, I agree, where Shepard is going to be more consistent, he can be more relied upon. But when you talk about adding other pieces, I feel like Shepard is still going to be Shep. Like, I don't think what Shep does changes because of who you add. Where Slayton, him not having that number one corner, which he did, like, he garnered the number one corner all year. It wasn't Shepard that was garnering it. Like, he would, like, Darius, you know, whoever it was, he was that number one guy. Slayton's the guy who can go up and make those big plays. And I think you would try and make a role for that and try and get Jones's eyes downfield. I know the offense, you know, Garrett doesn't see the same way as we do. I just feel like Slayton benefits so much more from a number one. And Justin, he's 4 years younger and he has less. I mean, Shepard has injuries. Shepard gets injured basically every, you know, almost every year. And with the 4 years younger, he's on the same cycle as Jones. There is a connection with Jones. You know, this year you saw there's a connection with Shepard too. I lean Slayton, but I think it's I'm asking the question because I think it's a good question. I think you could make really good arguments for both guys.
Yeah. No, I totally agree. And it honestly does depend on the offensive philosophy that Jason Garrett does want to have. You know, if they want to continue to be, you know, checking down and, you know, not checking down, but utilizing the intermediate part of the field, Sterling Shepard's more important. If they want to Freddie Kitchens it a little bit more and expand the field, then Darius Slayton might be a little bit more important. But you go back and forth. I'm a little bit more stern on Shepard also because I'm biased because I talk about him a lot. So I also recognize that I'm biased and I like him. So.
Okay, cool. Let us know in the comments what you think, Slayton or Shepard. All right, Justin, next on the list, Golden Tate, 5'10", 197 pounds, 32 years old. Has 2 years left on the deal, but he's likely going to be cut. They'll save 6.1 mil in cap space if they cut him. This season, he played 12 games. He had 35 catches, 388 yards, 2 touchdowns, 11.1 yards per catch. Compared to 2019, where he played 11 games, so he played one less game, he had 49 catches, so that's 14 more catches. 676 yards, so that's 292 yards more. 4 touchdowns more. 13.8 yards per catch, 2.7 yards per catch. I mean, that's a huge difference. Now, that being said, he played less in 2020, even though, like, his snap percentage for the year was 42% in 2020 compared to 59% in 2019. Where he, like you said, he played one less game. Once he got suspended after the Tampa game, he was done, Justin.
Yeah.
He played 38% of the snaps, 57%, 32%, 57%, 56%. In those 5 games after the suspension, he had 13 catches, 162 yards, 0 touchdowns. I mean, that's, some guys get that, like, will get those numbers on a regular basis for a game. And so you have that in the finish off his season. Here's something I will say, though. Per snap, Justin, and They ran the ball. They threw the ball less this year than they did in 2019.
You're gonna finagle this into some pro Golden Tate thing, and I'm not even gonna react to it.
Per snap, he had 1.09 yards per snap in 2020. In 2019, he had 1.08. They could have used him better. You can say whatever you want about Golden Tate, but he was able. If they used him the same way they did in 2019, he would have. I don't think everyone hates Tate. Now Tate deserves hate because he brought a lot on himself. The suspension, the whole throw me the damn ball, and the one game where he was actually open. Yes, did Tate get separation? Was he the guy that he's been in past years? No, but they didn't use him. They wasted him. There was no use of him being on the team really this year. The only big plays were from the slot, those fade routes where, you know, they have a curl on the outside and Tate fades out and has one-on-ones, and Jones puts a perfectly placed ball. Now he makes crazy catches, but that's what it took to get Tate involved this year. It was a bad year all around. And the Giants really had no interest of using him once after that Tampa game. I mean, from what everyone has said, they were trying their hardest to trade him at the deadline, and nobody would bite.
This was Golden Tate's worst year in terms of yards after the catch. Now, like I said, yards after the catch, largely a scheme-driven thing, but Golden Tate has always been able to find ways to get yards after the catch, even, you know, no matter what team he's been on. This was his worst yards after the catch year in a long time, at least since 2018, since they started tracking it on Pro Football Reference. And here's what you need to know about Golden Tate's season. I'm not going to fight back Bobby on anything because Golden Tate's done, and you know everybody knows my opinion. I think he sucks. Golden Tate, his average cushion at the line of scrimmage in terms of the nearest defender to him at the snap of the ball was 6.6 yards, which that was in the top quarter in the National Football League in terms of most cushion at the line of scrimmage. But the average separation on targets when he was on passes where he was targeted was 2.1 yards, which is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 least in the National Football League. So despite him getting a lot of cushion at the line of scrimmage, his average separation was 6 least in the National Football League. And I actually think his average separation was kind of better than it was last year, this year, and he was still 6 least. Tough.
They just didn't use him. I mean, we're not going to get into this offense all, but they just did not use him. I mean, think about some important moments. The first Eagles game, that first touchdown was all Golden Tate. To get back in that Tampa game, all Golden Tate. Now, they were perfect throws and crazy catches, but you know what? They were crazy catches. Arizona, the only game points they scored in that game were because of a Golden Tate catch. I don't see why they didn't use him more. I get you don't have to give him 80% of the snaps, but the fact that they just basically threw this guy away, I mean, you can hate him, you can hate the contract, but the fact that they threw him away after the Tampa game was kind of ridiculous.
Yeah, well,
especially going for the playoffs too.
If you don't, I mean, the thing is that if you don't get open, Bobby, I mean that's.
But
the
who
thing.
Are they? But it, who are they replacing him for? Austin Mack, come on now.
Had some good moments. One game.
He had one good moment, which we'll get to. All right, let's just go into Austin Mack. Golden Tate's no longer on this team.
He's done. He's done.
Austin Mack, 6'2", 215, undrafted free agent at Ohio State, had 7 catches for 91 yards. 4 of those catches and 72 of those yards came in the game that Golden Tate was suspended versus Washington. The rest of his season was 3 catches for 19 yards. Basically, what I learned from Austin Mack is he can catch a contested ball underneath. That's basically, like, if you can trust him to catch a contested ball, except for against Arizona where he dropped the ball on third down. But you can trust him to catch those tight, like, third down slants.
I would have liked to see him used more on contested balls down the field.
You got Slayton, Shep, and Tate on the team. I don't want to be throwing those to Austin Mack.
Well, he's the tallest one out of all of them, and that's what he did best in college. That was, like, the only thing that he did well in college, was catching contested balls.
That's the thing, he wasn't that good in college.
My thing is that if somebody's good at something, why not use him in that? And when this is, you know, you can talk about it, you know, how good Golden Tate was with contested catches, but, oh, you know, even Sterling Shepard caught some contested balls this year. But those, I mean, there is also a value to height. And Austin Mack is a physical, big-bodied guy that I'm sure he kind of that doesn't tower over some corners, but he's taller than corners, and I think that has a value to it.
Yeah, I mean, if he was 6'4", 6'5", I'd hear your point, but he's 6'2", and Slayton's 6'1", you know? Like, I have no issue with the way they use Austin Mack this year. If there's one guy I have no issue with, it's yeah. Austin, the way they use Austin Mack.
No, I mean, he's not that good. So, I mean, Austin Mack got the majority of his snaps when Jason Garrett would motion him in into the box, by the way. As a wide receiver, the Giants would be running with probably
a lot of fullback.
Yeah, the Giants. Yeah, so basically they added another man into the box and Austin Mack as an additional blocker. So clearly Joe Judge must have loved him as a blocker. So,
yeah, downfield blocker. Third year Letterman would be proud. Now next and last on the list, but not least, it's the man whose season it is, who's caught our hearts in the last two games. Dante Pettis, 6'1", 195 pounds. He's 25 years old. He was claimed after the 49ers cut him after he fumbled a kick return. It was a second-round pick for the 49ers, never panned out. His rookie year, he had some numbers, and he just never panned out there. He only played two games, but in those two games, Justin, he had four catches for 76 yards and a big touchdown, 19 yards per catch, 80% catch rate. He's talented. There's no doubt he's talented. What we're going to do this offseason, and I'm going to do it too, is we're going to do the Corey Coleman thing. Like, he's got talent. He's using the right way. He did enough for us to do that. I think Dante Pettis should be on the roster to start week one, 2021. As the number five wide receiver, it should be Dante Pettis.
You know it's going to be Cody Core, and they're going to cut him.
But it should be Dante Pettis. And he wears number 13. How about that?
Guarantee if he wore number 4, well, Joe Webb is 14. Guarantee if he wore 17. No, 17's black. Yeah, even 17. Guarantee if he wore 17, nobody would care.
No, I would care. He's a talent. Dante Pettis is a talent. Like, it had nothing to do with his number. Like, he is talented. He's the whole you don't give up on talent. So, like I said, you shouldn't be expecting him to be the second outside receiver like we did Corey Coleman going into 2019. But I do expect him to be wide receiver 5 and to get some roles. He has speed. He's able to go up and get the ball. He has traits of a good wide receiver. Doesn't mean he's going to put it together, but he does have those traits. So maybe this coaching staff can get that out of him. And it's not the craziest thing in the world for a second-round pick to struggle his first stint, go somewhere else, and be productive. Like, that's not a far-fetched idea.
That touchdown catch that he had against Dallas week 17 was kind of impressive. Not the best of throws in the world, and he did a good job adjusting in the air.
I thought it was a great throw.
It was a good throw, but Dante Pettis had to make an adjustment in the middle of the year to get that ball.
Caught it with his face.
Yeah.
All right, that's our wide receiver review.
Oof.
Went a little long with this episode, Oof. But that's what happens in the offseason. We appreciate you guys. We'll be back on Tuesday. I will be in Alabama. We're going to be streaming a ton on YouTube, so make sure to subscribe to the YouTube. Watch out for, tweeting. We're going to be doing a bunch of stuff. Maybe I'll harass Dave Gallman, Joe Judge, Jason Garrett. We'll see what happens. Appreciate you guys. We'll see you next week. Enjoy the weekend. Until then, let's go Big Blue.